I want to give you a little bit different perspective on the whole episode of Mei Meriva, where Miriam Hanaviya dies and the Be'er dries up and the Jewish people need water, and they come and complain to Moshe that they have no water and they're in a place where they may end up dying because of it. And the God tells Moshe to take his staff and to speak to the rock together with Aaron. And Moshe hits the rock, and Moshe is punished that him and Aaron are not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. They're going to have to die in the desert. What I'm going to tell you has a slight connection to something the Netziv says, but it's an elaboration on that idea. It's not what the Netziv was talking about, but it's a take off from what he says. The Netziv mentions that part of this whole episode was to ready the Jewish people for the kind of divine providence they would have when they got to Eretz Yisrael. In the desert, everything was done through open miracles. They needed food, man rained down from the heavens. They needed water in the beginning of the 40 years. Moshe hit a rock and water came from the rock. All miraculous things. Here, they were going to get ready for the change of how God was going to deal with them in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, there weren't going to be open miracles anymore. Everything was going to be done through hidden miracles, through nature. And if there was going to be a drought, and there was going to be a period where there was no rain, so they didn't hit rocks and make water come from rocks. What did they do? They gathered the people together, and someone would get up and say Divrei Torah and induce them to do tshuva and get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they would daven, and then it would rain. So too, God here, says the Netziv, wanted them to gather the people together by the rock, but not to hit the rock and in this miraculous way cause water, but somewhere semi getting ready for that new thing. What were they going to do? Speak to the rock. They weren't supposed to say, rock, give water. They were supposed to learn some Torah there, say some Divrei Torah, daven, and then the rock would give its water. It's not what's going to happen in Israel, because there the water's going to come from the clouds. But it's not what happened in the beginning of the 40 years where Moshe hit a rock and water comes out. It's somewhere in between. It's the beginning of changing that divine providence from miracle to davening, learning, and rain coming. So that's what they were supposed to do. That's basically what the Netziv says. I want to enlarge upon that and go a little bit different path. And that is the following. Why Taka in Eretz Yisrael is it so dependent on rain? Okay, why did the Ribbono Shel Olam give us a land not like Egypt, where there is a readily available water supply, the Nile, which overflows in cycles? And in Eretz Yisrael, you have to depend on rainfall, and constantly, or at least sporadically, there were droughts, and there was need to make fast days, and to daven for the rain, or whatever. The answer is very simple. What is the whole purpose of rain altogether? Why did God create a rain cycle, that vegetation needs rain, and in order to have water to drink, we need rain? Why didn't just create water that was always there? And that's the way it was in the beginning of the creation. There was a mist that came up from the ground and watered all the vegetation. It didn't rain. You know when it started raining? Rashi says, when man was created, and he recognized the need for rain, and he davened for it, then it rained. Meaning, it's not that we need rain because God created the world in such a way that rain is necessary. And because we need rain, we daven. No, just the opposite. In order to give us a reason to daven, that's why God created the world to need rain. And rain is something that man can't produce. It's a key that's in the hands of God, even today. No scientist can produce rain. The most they can do is seed clouds, and even that's not so effective. The most you can, a person needs to know that he's dependent on the Rabbanu Shalom. Rain makes us aware that we're dependent on the Rabbanu Shalom, and the Rabbanu Shalom directly provides for our needs. In fact, it says all rain comes specifically for Eretz Yisrael, and the rest of the world gets the leftovers. The leftovers are sometimes more than the original. Just like by, it says that the whole world is provided for food in the schus of Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. And Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa himself ate some dates, kav charuvim, some boxer, right, the whole week. But the pipeline for God's connection goes through Eretz Israel, just like it goes through the tzaddik. So the whole purpose of the whole idea of rain is to make us aware that even though we're not being treated with open miracles, and one would think that God abandoned us to nature, but the rain shows not the case. That in Eretz Israel we have a direct relationship with God, and even though God is not dealing with us in open miracles, but he's dealing with us in hidden miracles, and he hasn't severed his relationship with us one bit. He's close to us, and that's the whole idea of rain in Eretz Israel. And therefore, God set us up to learn that lesson. The people were afraid. This is part of the sin of the spies. They were afraid that when God would now deal with us in Eretz Israel through nature, not through open miracles, that to a certain degree he abandoned us. He separated himself from us. He's dealing with us indirectly through nature. It's not true. God is dealing with us directly. It's just, it appears to be natural. He's to a certain degree hiding his face, but he's there. In our situation, he hides his face tremendously, but he's still there. God never severs his relationship with the Jewish people. He only wants us to be aware that we need him, and that we don't go through intermediaries, that we turn to him directly, because he will directly be involved with us. And even though things are going to happen naturally, nature is not a separation between us and God. It's just a means for God to be able to deal with us. It's like a stick in the hand of the person. It's not a separation. It's just a means. That's all. That's the lesson. And therefore, there are two things that preface this, the be'er, the source of water going away. The first thing is the paraduma. The paraduma represents taharason shel Yisrael, the purity of the Jewish people. So God sets the stage. We're talking in a time when the Jewish people are pure. They're purified. Purity means that they're not tameh. Tuma is where there's a separation between the person and God. Tuma is a mechitza. It's a partition that separates between the person and God, and because therefore a person who's tameh can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, he can't eat sacrifices, he's separated. There's a separation between the physical and the spiritual. So we're not tameh, we're tahar. Paraduma. We have that tremendous connection, closeness to God. So the stage is set for a time when we're close to God. And Miriam dies, and it says that the death of tzaddikim is mechaper. It atones for sins. So we don't have sins that separate between us and God. And the reason that when a tzaddik dies, it causes kapara, it causes an atonement, and it brings us closer to God, because one could abuse the tzaddik and think that he's an intermediary or she's an intermediary between us and God. And when the tzaddik dies and we can't rely on them anymore, then we turn to God and seek to have a closer connection, and to remind ourselves that it's not the tzaddik that we can rely on. The tzaddik just connects us to God. He's not an intermediary. He just teaches us how to connect ourselves into the Rabbanu Shalom. So therefore, the nisa, the death of a tzaddik, should be an incentive for us to get closer to God. And not to feel that, well, the tzaddik's not there, we don't have the intermediary, we lost our connection to God. Just the opposite. We can have a close connection without that tzaddik too. As long as we learn from what that tzaddik taught us. We don't need the tzaddik to connect us to God. We need what the tzaddik teaches us and inspires us with to get closer to God. Okay. And the death of Miriam also took away the Be'er, which came in her Zechus. So we recognize that we're missing something, and we need the Rabbanu Shalom. That was the next thing, that the stage was set for us to recognize that we have that close connection to God, we're pure, we have no sins that separate us, and yet we need God. We need to come on to Him. We don't have that water. And therefore, it came to tell us not a punishment. God's not taking away the water as a punishment. Just like He makes us dependent on rainfall in Eretz Yisrael, it's not a punishment. It's that we should be aware that we need the Rabbanu Shel Olam and that He's there for us. That's the purpose of the whole rain cycle. And therefore, this was a preparation, like the Netziv says, for our how we're going to have to function in Eretz Yisrael. And this is all part of a atonement for the sin of the golden calf, which is Parah Aduma. What was the sin of the golden calf? They put too much trust in Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come back after the 40 days, according to their calculation, and they felt that they can't exist without a Moshe Rabbeinu. They can't deal with God directly. They need some intermediary. So they made a golden calf to take the place of Moshe Rabbeinu. Their whole sin was rooted in too much reliance on a Moshe Rabbeinu or something similar to him, and not relying on their ability to deal with God and to relate to God directly. And therefore, what is the kapara of the Parah Aduma? One idea: let the mother of the eagle come and atone for what her child did. So you bring the Parah Aduma, the red cow is like a golden cow that atones for what its child did. Meaning, the Maharal says, the idea, why do we bring the mother? To show that everything that you think is an intermediary between you and God is not a power to itself, but it came from somewhere. It's a power that's generated by another power. And there's a power that generates that. And if you trace everything back to its source, the ultimate is God. So don't look at the eagle as a power to itself, something that separates between you and God. Look at the eagle, bring the mother. The eagle was generated by a mother, and that mother by another mother. And everything, if you trace it back to its source, goes back to the first cause, which is God Himself. So, therefore, this is also part of that whole process, that we shouldn't rely on intermediary powers, because when we come to Eretz Yisrael, and they're going to be what appears to be intermediary powers called nature, we're not going to have that direct relationship openly with God. There's going to be the danger that we put too much trust in those intermediary powers of planting and plowing and rainfall, whatever it may be, and not realize that God is still dealing with us directly, but He's hiding His face and He's doing it through these secondary powers, but it's all God behind it all. That's the lesson that had to be taught. And therefore, Moshe and Aaron were commanded to take their stick, which 40 years earlier they hit the rock in a miraculous way and brought water, and it was obvious that this is God's doing. And now they're going to hold that stick and say, the same way that that stick 40 years before created the water, now it's going to change. And the water's going to come because I, Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the pillar of Torah, is commanded to say Torah by the rock, and Torah connects the person to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, right? Torah has the power of purifying a person, of taking away all the separations between you and God. Torah is God's word. Torah is, kibiyochel, God Himself. It's God's will, Torah. So we connect ourselves, we purify ourselves, take away all the things that separate ourselves through Torah, right? And that's what's going to be when there's a drought in Eretz Israel. Somebody's going to get up and say words of Torah, and Aaron, who is the one who's mechaper, who atones and brings sacrifices, he's going to also say words of tefillah, of davening, which is like sacrifices to bring us closer to God. Moshe, through his Torah, is going to separate, is going to take away all the separations, and Aaron's going to bring us closer. But it's not Moshe and Aaron who are doing it, it's the Torah and the davening that does it. And that's what makes the Jewish people connected to God. Mi goy gadol, it says, who is such a great nation? Asher lo Elohim krovim elof kashem elokeinu b'chol kareinu elof. What great nation has God so close to them whenever he calls, because they call out to him, he's there. And what great nation has a Torah and all the righteous laws that I'm giving you today? That's what makes us special and gives us a special relationship with God, that we are called God's children. Meaning nothing separates, everything is direct. Just like a father deals with his children, God deals with us. There's no intermediaries. What makes that? Tefillah, our ability to pray to God directly, and Torah, our ability to connect to God directly through the Torah. Those are the two things. And those are represented by Moshe, Torah, and Aaron, tefillah. And they're supposed to speak to the rock, Torah and tefillah, and show us that God's going to provide water in a natural way, but it's not going to be an intermediary, and it's not Moshe and Aaron are the intermediaries. It's us, ourselves, that have that connection to God directly through Torah and tefillah. And I found quite a few Midrashim that bring out this idea that I'm telling you. First of all, it says that God wanted to show us how precious we are, right? And he wanted us to realize that just like the rock, in the beginning of the 40 years, had to be hit to bring its water, okay? But at the end of the 40 years, it's a natural process. The rock becomes so attuned to God's will that God's will is fulfilled through nature itself. And just speaking to the rock is enough. The Midrash gives an example. You have a kid. He hasn't yet gotten used to learning Torah. So he's not so interested. So the malama, the teacher, sometimes has to hit him to get his attention. But after he learns Torah for years, it becomes part of his nature. And now you don't have to hit him anymore. It's enough to speak to him and explain to him. That's what happened. In the beginning of the 40 years, the rock had to be hit to do God's will. After 40 years, it's a natural thing. And the Jewish people should have made a Kal Vachomer and say, if the rock naturally does God's will, it has this connection. Nature is just a flow of God's will. Then, and it gets no reward or punishment. We who are rewarded and punished, surely should reflect God's will automatically and not need to be coerced or whatever. And that would have brought out this idea that we are like children to God and we are a natural expression of God's will just as much as the rock expresses God's will naturally without having to be coerced. Same concept though, that we have that tremendous connection to God even if it appears that there's something like nature separating us. It's no separation. And therefore the Midrash says in the Lamdenu that God held back the water when Miriam died in order that we should be troubled and pained at the loss of the tzaddikus and recognize that we need God. And both things were important. One is we realize Miriam is not there and we shouldn't rely too much on the fact that if she's not there, then we can't connect into God. No, even if she's not there, you can connect in. But first you have to recognize you're missing something. You need the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's the whole idea of rain. God created a system where we know we need him and we know we can approach him and he will deal with us directly. So the tzaddik's not here. Don't feel that if the tzaddik's not there, you lost your connection to God. The tzaddik isn't your connection. What the tzaddik teaches you and influences you is the connection, Torah and tefillah. And you have that ability for Torah and tefillah even without Miriam. So recognize your need, turn to God directly, and He'll provide the need directly for you. And there's another medrash. The medrash says the people, Taka, were questioning this. And they, when they saw that when Miriam died, the Be'er went away, they got scared. And they said, well, eventually Moshe and Aaron are going to die. And we're going to lose our whole food supply. The Ananim are going to go away when Aaron dies. And the Mon is going to go away when Moshe dies. And we're going to die in the desert. We're not going to have any sustenance. And the Rabban Shem wanted to show them that's not the case. That even though Miriam died, you're going to get your water back. And you're going to get it back not because of Moshe and Aaron's, what they do, but what they teach you. So you can make the connection yourself. And therefore the Midrash Tanhuma says that this was the lesson. When God took us out of Egypt, He brought down Mon and a Be'er, right, for us miraculously. And God said, don't worry. When you go into Eretz Yisrael, I'll bring you back all these good things. Not necessarily the same way they came in the desert miraculously, but I'm going to bring you these same things, water and food. But here it's going to come from the ground, not from the sky. You're going to be involved in planting and plowing, but it's me who's providing it. I'm the one who's Azon Esakol. I'm the one that you're going to bless for Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz. Even though you have to put in the Hishtadlus, you have to fulfill your prerequisite of being involved. But don't ever think that you're the cause or you need Tzadikim to be the cause. The cause is me. I'm just doing it in a way that doesn't appear to be direct, but you have to believe that it's direct, and that's the purpose, to have that connection in a way that you choose to believe in the connection. And therefore, since the whole purpose the Rabban Shlom had was to make them uncomfortable, mitztayrim, to be uncomfortable, and to realize that they're lacking something, and out of desperation to turn to Him, and then He would show us that He's there. So there was no sin in their feeling discomforted. And not only that, when they complained, God wanted them to complain. He wanted them to recognize how bad their situation was, so they'd appreciate how much He was there to help them. And that's why it says, "Ein adam nishpas al tzar," when a person's in a situation of tzar, of discomfort, more than discomfort, they're suffering. And they call out to God out of the suffering, even if they do it in a way that is not so respectful. They're not held responsible for it, because that's what God wants. He wants us to feel that dependence on Him. He wants us to cry out to Him, God, where are You? And then, when He provides for us, we'll appreciate where it's coming from. We'll appreciate that relationship. But if we don't think we're missing anything, we think we can provide it, we think everything is fine, well, we have natural means of providing it, and we're not so suffering, then we won't find Him either. So if God is the one who initiated that suffering, that we should turn to Him and then appreciate that He's the one who deals with us directly, then He can't hold us responsible if we cry out, and even not so respectfully, from that suffering. That's called Ein Adam Nitfas Al Tzaro. Person's not held responsible. He's not what's the word I'm looking for? He's not not accused. He's not held guilty. He's not that's a good word. Yeah, he's not culpable. Right, responsible for things that he says out of tzar, out of suffering. There's another medrash that says Moshe and Aaron were supposed to make the following statement: Ko amar Hashem, so said God to the rock, let your water come out. Meaning they weren't there to let the people think that Moshe and Aaron brought the water. They were supposed to learn Torah, and they're supposed to say tefillah, and that would be as if God is saying to the rock, get your water. You're getting the water from God. All these things only make it appear to be natural causes, but the truth is it's your connection to God that's bringing you the water, the same way that the rain will come in Eretz Yisrael, because you have that close connection to God. And that's what the Medrash HaGadol says, from all of this, they would recognize that God's presence was amongst them. That was the bottom line. To recognize that God's presence is amongst them, even if it appears that God abandoned them, he's making them uncomfortable, suffer, took away their water supply, and it's functioning with them through natural means. All of that is only a facade. But God's presence is there, and if they need, God's going to provide for them. Now, that was what was supposed to be. Moshe Rabbeinu misread the situation, and he got angry at them. Why are you suffering? Why don't you believe that God's going to help you? But that's exactly what God wanted. He wanted them to feel abandoned and then to turn to him. He didn't want them to feel, well, you know, God provides the man every day and the be'er was there yesterday, it'll be there tomorrow. Because then you rely on these seemingly secondary powers that exist and you don't realize it's coming from God. He wanted them to realize they were missing something and to turn to him. But Moshe Rabbeinu misread it and he said, what are you complaining about? Why don't you just assume that everything's going to be okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu got angry at them, and he called them morim, rebels. Why are you rebelling against God? They weren't rebelling. This is exactly what God wanted from them. And therefore, since it wasn't a sin, Moshe Rabbeinu had no right to get angry at them, and he got angry for nothing, and he was punished for getting angry, and for calling them rebels when they weren't rebels. If they did something wrong, Moshe Rabbeinu had the right and the responsibility to castigate them. But not where God set them up, and this is what he wanted, not where they're doing something, they're not doing anything wrong. And the Medrash says, Medrash Rabbah says that Moshe should have learned from Hagar. God is not depriving them, he wants to provide for them. If he provided for the Shivcha of Avram Avinu water in the desert, and didn't let Yishmael die, most certainly he's going to provide for the children of these Avos. So it's not that there's any danger over here. So then why is God taking away the water, making them think they're in danger? Because he wants them to daven. He wants them to turn to him. That's what it means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu misavel et tfilos. Sometimes the Rebbeinu Shem puts a tzadik or Klal Yisrael in a situation that seems to be dangerous or seems to be perilous, in order that we should daven. There's really no danger. But he wants us to realize that we have that connection to him. And therefore, the sin was that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't affect this lesson. The lesson wasn't learned, right? They didn't believe in how great Klal Yisrael were, and that they have this ongoing connection with God, and God's not going to abandon them. And he's just showing them how close they are. Right? And that's called, by Moshe Rabbeinu, a lack of belief in God. If you don't believe in the Jewish people, and God believes in us, then there's a lack of belief in God. And Moshe Rabbeinu, on his level, lacked that total trust and faith in the Jewish people and their relationship with God. It was something missing. And that's why the Ramban says that the sin was also partially that Moshe said, do you think we can bring water out of this rock? But he phrased it not that God's going to bring the water, we're going to bring the water for you. And that just compounded the lesson they were supposed to learn now became harder to learn. The lesson was supposed to be you don't need a Moshe Rabbeinu. You don't need intermediaries. You just need to do the things that they teach you, tefillah and Torah. But Moshe phrased it as if he's taking the water out of the rock, as if he's a needed intermediary between them and God. And that was exactly the antithesis of what the lesson was supposed to be. In fact, they were supposed to say, like we said, Ko Amar Hashem. They're supposed to speak and say, God is bringing the water, not us. You don't need us. You need us only to teach you Torah and to help you daven. That's all. You don't need us to do it for you. And that's called Me'ila. It says, the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu is described with four words. Yan lo hemantem bi, you didn't believe in me, you didn't have faith in me. Lahak disheni, to sanctify me in the eyes of the people. Had they had more trust in God's relationship with the Jewish people, they would have realized that God wasn't punishing them. He was just trying to show them this relationship. and then that would have sanctified God in the eyes of the Jewish people, and that was missing. And because of that, Marisim, Moshe and Aaron rebelled. They didn't do what God said. Uma'altem, ne'ilah, means they changed. The whole scenario was set up to bring out a certain Kiddush Hashem, and they changed it and used it in a different way. That's called me'ilah. Me'ilah is where you take something holy and you use it for a secular purpose. That's exactly what happened over here. God set up a scenario and they changed it and used it for the wrong purpose. Instead of using it for the Kiddush Hashem, for the tremendous holy purpose that it was supposed to be used for. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu's punishment was that he wasn't going to go into Eretz Yisrael with him. How did that correct the sin, the idea? Now the Jewish people would see, wow, look how important we are to God. If Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't affect us the way he was supposed to, then look at the terrible punishment he gets. He's not going to Eretz Yisrael. First lesson. It teaches them how close and how much God cares for them. That if somebody, even a Moshe Rabbeinu, deals with them and is angry with them for something they didn't do, look how bad he's punished. That means that God really champions our cause, and he really cares for us. Secondly, if God cares for us, he wouldn't want to do something that's damaging to us by killing Moshe Rabbeinu and not letting go with us in Eretz Yisrael. Must be we don't need Moshe Rabbeinu to go in Eretz Yisrael. We don't need to rely on him. We can rely on our own merit, right, on our davening, on our Torah. We don't need a Moshe Rabbeinu. So it taught them that lesson too. And therefore, all the things that should have been taught through speaking to the rock were taught by Moshe Rabbeinu dying before he went to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why the Medrash says, if you, Moshe Rabbeinu, want to go into Eretz Yisrael, then I can't forgive the Jewish people, they can't go into Eretz Yisrael. If you want me to forgive them and they can go into Eretz Yisrael, then I can't forgive you. It's one or the other. Meaning, Bnei Yisrael can only go into Eretz Yisrael if they learn this lesson, that they don't need intermediaries, because otherwise Eretz Yisrael is going to be terrible for them, because everything's through nature, they're going to think it's an intermediary. But if they learn that they don't need intermediaries, then they can go into Eretz Yisrael. If Moshe dies, they learn that lesson. If Moshe doesn't die, they didn't learn that lesson. Doesn't die, they don't learn that lesson. They could have learned the lesson through Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the rock, but he didn't do that. So there's no other possibility than to Moshe Rabbeinu to die and to teach that lesson through his death. But if it's not taught, then they can't go into Eretz Yisrael, because they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be a danger to them to deal with God through nature when they're going to think nature is an intermediary. And they're not going to realize that God is still dealing with them directly through the facade of nature. And that's why Aaron was also punished. Because even though Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take the staff, both of them were supposed to speak to the rock, one with Torah and one with Tefillah. And it would show them these two ways of connecting to God through Torah and Tefillah, right? And therefore, Aaron didn't do what he was supposed to do either. He didn't say those Tefillahs over the rock. They hit the rock instead and gave the completely different message. One, things don't do God's will directly. You have to be hit, right? So, and you need an intermediary, miracles, to hit that rock. And you need a Moshe to hit the rock. All the wrong lessons. And Aaron should have spoken too. And I was thinking, they ask the question, there's many answers. Moshe Rabbeinu davened and davened that God should let him go into Eretz Yisrael. Aaron never davened. He finally said he died. Never davened one bit that God should change the decree and let him go in. Why? I was thinking, based on this, I have an answer. Because what was Moshe's sin? Moshe's sin was he didn't teach the Jewish people Torah over the rock and show them that their connection to God through Torah, through the purity of Torah, right, is enough for them to get water. Like in Eretz Israel, to get rain. Their connection through Torah. What was Aaron's job? To show them that their connection to God through tefillah, through prayer, was enough to bring them rain. Okay? And therefore, Aaron abused the tefillah, the prayer. He couldn't therefore use prayer to rescind the gzeira. Moshe Rabbeinu abused Torah. He could use prayer to He couldn't call upon his merit of Torah because that was the sin. He didn't teach him Torah over the rock. But he could use the avenue of prayer. But Aaron abused the avenue of prayer. So how could he use that as a means to get the decree rescinded? Right? That was the sin. You didn't use your prayer properly. You're not going to be able now to use prayer to get out of the Gzeirah. It's a self-contradiction. It also explains why Miriam had to die. It also explains why all of them had to die. But Moshe and Aaron were given a chance to show that it's not them. But for 40 years in the desert, the Jewish people got used to the fact that all of their ability to exist came through these three tzaddikim. And they could make the mistake to think that they were intermediaries. And therefore these intermediaries had to die. Miriam had to die, and the water had to go away, and had to come back by the Jewish people recognizing it wasn't Miriam who brought us the water. It was what Miriam represented in us that brought the water. The proof is Miriam's not here, it's going to come back. How's it going to come back? Not Moshe and Aaron bringing it back. It's going to come back because the Torah and Tefillah bring it back, which is basically our Torah and Tefillah. That was supposed to be the lesson. So it was necessary for the Jewish people to see that these three intermediaries were not necessary. Because if they were, then in Eretz Yisrael, they're not going to be able to exist. Everything's intermediaries. So they had to learn that lesson. And that's why Miriam, even though she didn't sin, had to die before they came into Eretz Yisrael to teach them that lesson. And the truth is, this is also how it's going to be in the future redemption. The Mishnah says, and this is the way that Rebbe Rucham from Mir, the Mir Mashgiach, explains it. The Mishnah says that before Mashiach comes, all the things that people relied on, truth and justice and the American way or whatever, right, are going to be shown not to have anything you can rely on. Truth is not going to be around, and justice is not going to be around. And Ein Lanu Lehishoin El Avinu Shebashamayim. We only have God to rely on. And that's exactly what God wants us to know. As long as you think you have other things, other intermediaries to rely on, then rely on them. It's only when you realize that those intermediaries are not separations between you and God, but it's God functioning through them directly with you. Just, it's a facade. Then you'll have that direct relationship and God will redeem you. So before Mashiach comes, we're going to have that feeling that we have that close relationship. We have nothing else to rely on but God. And even the hishtadlus that we have to do, the natural means that we have to take, is not something that separates between us and God. It just enables God to have that close relationship, that direct relationship, under a facade. That's all. Nothing more than that. And therefore, it says that the final... God is going to bring all this tochacha, all the punishments on us, 98 klalos, to make us realize first that we need him and that we can't rely on any of the things that we thought we could rely on, whatever they were, nature, idolatry, whatever it was, other nations. But it says that the last makkah, which isn't even written in the Torah, which is equal to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, is siluk ha-tzadikim. God is going to take away the tzadikim. Why? Because the ultimate is that we thought we could rely on a Beis HaMikdash. God took it away. You don't need a Beis HaMikdash as an intermediary. The Beis HaMikdash is the place where I am. It's not something that separates between me and you. It's something that enables me to have that connection with you. Same thing with the Tzaddikim. The Tzaddikim are not an intermediary that separate between me and you. They teach you how to have that connection with me. But if you put too much trust in them, if you look at them as intermediaries, then I'm going to take them away. And then you'll have to turn to me because you won't have that intermediary. Same, you'll have to turn to me when you don't have a Beis HaMikdash. If you put too much trust in the Beis HaMikdash, I'll take it away. Put too much trust in Tzaddikim, I'll take them away. And then you'll have to turn to me directly. That's when the Geula will come. So that, I think, is a possible perspective on this whole episode. And it has tremendous implications even till today of how we're supposed to look at God's relationship to us in a time when it's not even through nature, but it's Hester upon him. God's hiding his face. But to see that all the things that we think separate between us and God. All the things that we think are intermediaries between us and God are not really. They're just a facade that God hides his face behind, but the Rabbanu Shlomo is dealing with us directly, and we have to deal with him directly also. Yes. In fact, there are other opinions that put into a different, little bit different perspective. Moshe Rabbeinu had other reasons why he couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. Already way back when he complained, how come God didn't redeem them right away? God already told him, he hinted to him, you're not going to go in. And all these things just added up. They all were reasons. In addition, the Abarbanel says, God set Moshe Rabbeinu up for this. And this was not really a sin. What he really was punished for was the fact that he caused the sin of the spies. But if it was open that that's why he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, because of the sin of the spies, then we would have said, well, Moshe had the same sin as the spies, and that's ridiculous. His part in the sin was very subtle. So in order to make a smokescreen, God set up Moshe Rabbeinu for this, which nobody understands what's going on over here. We hit the rock, spoke to the rock, whatever you can say. There's a million different possibilities, and it's a very subtle sin. It's a smokescreen to cover up for the real sin, and we should realize that we need this smokescreen because the real sin that he caused, the sin of the spies, is not something we can understand. Because it's not to be taken as if he was being guilty of the same sin. It says, even the Michtav Nechmelio says like this, even Rebbeim, sometimes you rely too much on the Rebbe and you let him do your thinking for you. And you don't put any thought in mitzvahs. You just do what you're told like a robot. But that's not what a Rebbe is supposed to be. A Rebbe is supposed to teach you how to think. Even Das Torah, right, it's an important point. Das Torah, you go to somebody and they make decisions for you. That's the opposite of what the whole world is about. You have to make decisions. What is Das Torah? You go to a Talmud Chacham, and he tells you enough information that you can make an intelligent decision. In other words, before you go to him, you don't see the situation the way it really is. So he sets you straight and gives you a Torah view of the situation, what your options are, what the choices are. And he sees it in a way that's objective. You see it subjectively. So you distort it. You don't have enough information to see it how the Torah wants you to see it and how you really should be seeing it. That's what a Talmud Chacham, he's able to show you an objective view of your issue and a Torah view. Now you have enough information and a proper view of the situation to make the right choice. You can still choose the wrong way, but it's your choice. But now at least you have the environment within which to make the choice. That's called Das Torah. So if you don't use it like that and you abuse leaders and you decide you're not going to think, you do mitzvahs now without thinking, without any depth, just externally, right, and you rely on the leaders, well, they'll think for me, then God takes away the leaders and he forces you to think. That's what the Michtam Eliyahu says. It fits in nicely with what we said. And there's an interesting machlokas between the Meiri and the Mukhi Yosef. It's not an argument altogether, it's just stages. It says if you have somebody sick in your home, you should go to a chacham, to a sage, and and he should ask for rachamim, v'yivakishova, and you should ask for mercy for the person. So the Mukhi Yosef says simply it means that if you have somebody sick, go to a Talmud chacham, he'll daven for the person. And he said that's why the custom is that we daven for sick people in shul on Shabbos when the Talmid chacham are there. The Meiri says something different. The Meiri says, go to the Talmud Chacham and he'll teach you how to daven. Not that he'll daven for you. He'll teach you how to daven. You may not know how to daven, so you have to go to a Talmud Chacham to learn. And then the Mukhi Yosef could be, till you learn, the guy may die before you learn how to daven. So the Talmud Chacham will daven for you, but but his main purpose is not to daven for you, it's to teach you how to do it. He doesn't have a direct line to God, right? You have the same line. You may not know how to dial, so he'll teach you how to dial. But until he teaches you how to dial, maybe he'll dial for you. But the main purpose is that he should teach you how to dial. That's the idea. Yeah.
So couldn't that already happen in the Shoah, that so many of the Siddiqui were taken away from us?
Yeah.
And so maybe it already did happen. And
yeah.
Today, when 80% of Jews don't even believe that there's Siddiqui in the world, they don't believe in Torah, they have no concept.
Right.
So
we're talking about God, right. It's talking about the people who know better. In all generations, there was always a minority of people who knew. God holds us responsible, not the ones who don't know.
So we're responsible?
Right, to learn that lesson.
But it could
have
been.
Huh?
It could have
been. Yeah. A lot of it for sure happened.
So a child, another question I have, a child's like totally dependent, they be on the parents. And it all, you know, they, even though they think like a little child, they grow, they think they can do it on their own, but then eventually they grow into somebody who can. But it's not that way with Hashem. We always have to depend on Him.
But even right, we're always like that little child, yeah. Except that Rabbeinu Shem wants us to do it for ourselves through mitzvahs and Torah and Harishtadlis, right? He's there to make it happen. But He wants us to have the feeling that we made the choice and that we put in the effort or whatever. He'll do it for us in the end. But He wants us to have that feeling that we're not just receivers, we're also doing something.
I just kind of got this feeling like it sounded like almost, excuse me for saying this, like egotistical, the way that God just wants us to rely on.
No, because
to make us more powerful.
Right, but it's for ours, right, exactly, for our sake. And what perfects our neshama is having that connection. So He wants us to have that connection for our sake, not for His sake.